Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Bucher and Friends podcast, co-starring 10-year NFL veteran and Super Bowl champion, Will Blackman.
Grabbing from the end zone, he throws, and it's a deflect away, and it is picked off by Will Blackman, the former Giant.
Tim Dwight watches it hit, bounces, picks it up at the 10, slips a defender, fumble the football, it's up for grabs, it's covered in the end zone by Will Blackman for a Green Bay touchdown!
And now, here is your host.
Let's send it over to Rick Bucher.
Rick Bucher.
Welcome to another episode of Bucher and Blackman, subsidiary Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. I'm Rick Bucher. You can see me on FS1. You can read me on Bleacher Report. And you can follow me on Twitter at Rick Bucher. He is NFL vet and Super Bowl champ Will Blackman. You can see him on the NFL Network, and you can follow him on Twitter at Will Blackman. All right, so I feel like the big news coming out of the weekend was the quadruple overtime game between the Blazers and the Nuggets. And you did. It went on so long, longer than the Kentucky Derby, although that was much longer than the fastest 2 minutes in sports, too. It went on so long that you actually ended up watching some of the game.
I was waiting for the game to be over. And then I was like, you know what? It keeps going on. I might as well tune in.
When you're watching another sporting event, another sport, and you can appreciate basketball, what are you thinking as you're watching them? Do you have a read on like just the signs of when guys are hitting that fatigue level where they are struggling?
Yeah, you can see the effort. That's what it comes down to. You can see the effort in terms of what they're doing. Are they using the same moves? Are they blowing past defenders? Or I can tell, especially, you see less ISOs.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I see it. You see less ISOs and tons of picks.
Well,
and guys are just jacking up shots.
You also see less dancing around.
Oh yeah, you see fundamentals, setup. Right?
nobody's massaging the ball. Nobody's got 6-7 moves. It's like, I got to get a step, and if I can get a step, I'm going to go. And if I get him back on his heels, I'm going to take the shot.
Right.
The most physical. I'm curious what your experience as far as the most physically taxing game that you ever played. When you walked away from that game, it was like, you needed the IV, or you were just washed, or it took you days to recover. I know with football, it's so physical that there's probably a lot of days from the bumps and bruises that it takes some time to recover. But I'm just thinking in terms of somebody who gave you a run for your money from an endurance standpoint.
I mean, for a game, this is easy. And I would say that my entire team would concur. This is easy. This is the 2012 NFC Championship game versus the 49ers. That went into double overtime. And I mean, that game went so long. So pregame, I took a Toradol injection because my knee was bugging me. That game went so long that my Toradol wore off.
Wow. So
okay, usually that doesn't wear off like that for a long time. It wore off.
So
I was exhausted.
Tell me what, first of all, I've never had a Toradol shot. So tell me, if your knee is aching or something is aching and you get a Toradol shot, what happens?
Thanos. One snap and it's gone.
Really?
It is the cure all. That's why it's dangerous. Yeah.
Huh. So you can't feel that it hurts.
It doesn't hurt. No, you can go back to your daily schedule program.
Wow. Wow. And is there a limit on how many? Like,
yeah, once, like every whatever. I get one a game. So when it wore off and I actually felt my knee starting to bother me again, they're like, well, we can't give you another one. It's a limit. We can't give you two.
Right. Oh, so you were looking for a second one during that game?
I needed another one. I said, come on, Doc.
I need to go in the tent.
I said, Ronnie Barnes, hook me up, man. This is pre-tent. This is before the tent.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I actually, it's funny, I posted a picture a couple weeks ago about it was the whole entire Giants defense from that postseason. We were in a huddle. Mm-hmm. We all were taking a knee. And what happened in that picture is Deion Grant, who was our leader at the time, he would, after every like three and out or after every turnover, he would run over to the sideline and we would pray as a defense. And so when it became overtime, he gathered the entire defense. Some offensive guys jumped in and we prayed as a team for overtime. So that was, I posted that picture like, hey, team, this is the essence of team. And a lot of Giants who were on that team, all of the comments were, man, that was the most exhausted ever been. That was the most draining game. That was physical, brutal. And if you want to find one game that exemplifies what Eli Manning's about, it was that one right there. Because he got his ass whooped and still got it done. That game was tough. We whoever went to the Super Bowl earned that damn thing.
Yeah. And obviously you didn't feel the after effects. You had enough recovery. I mean, that was the other part for me that was amazing is
you mean watching. for the next game?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, totally, because it was Super Bowl. So we had, 2 weeks from the last game?
So you were good. You were good for the next one. That for me was the most amazing part is that then they had game four, and maybe for the Nuggets. I thought the Nuggets would be washed. I thought the fact that the game was going to be played in Portland, that it was going to give the Blazers a huge advantage because they'd have their crowd behind them that would carry them physically. And the Nuggets ended up tying the series 2-2. So what's the approach in that game? At what point did you feel like you were redlining physically?
Well, here's what's crazy. What actually caused my knee to be painful again is I think on a return, somebody ended up twisting up my leg. I just think just overall, it was the physicality that was draining. Because I've been in games that gone for a long time, and the game was just long. Mm-hmm. We played one Monday night game against the Cowboys when I was on the Redskins, and it was like third quarter. It was 11 o'clock, and I remember I was out there. I yawned for a second.
Wow.
I yawned. Yeah.
Because you were out there a long time, but you weren't necessarily out there fatigued.
Yeah, I wasn't physically fatigued. I just yawned. Why? Because it was 11:30.
Understood.
But that game versus the 49ers was just, physical. Guys were getting laid out left and right. It was a brutal game. That's when the Niners had that really physical defense that, mm-hmm. that has been doing well at the time. They were top five defense for like 3 or 4 years in a row. And so that's exactly what I remember. I remember just getting to the locker room. I don't think I took off my uniform for probably like 20 minutes.
Just too tired.
Oh, yeah. That's probably the only time I followed the hydration protocol, too. Usually afterwards I don't get anything to drink. I'm like, I'll have like a juice or something.
What is the hydration protocol?
It's per pound, like a Gatorade and water per pound, I believe it is.
What?
Yeah. So how many pounds you lost in that game?
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah. So
they weigh you and then...
Yeah, not total. So if I lost like 5 pounds. I got
linemen like drinking 270... What is it?
Back up the truck. Yeah. What is this? Yeah.
Just get him a hose.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, when you're watching a four overtime or just any sport, what do you think is the most exhausting sport that you've ever watched?
The most exhausting sport? Probably UFC.
Really?
I think mixed martial arts. Dude, to fight a guy for 5 minutes alone?
Yeah.
Is crazy. And then if you're in a championship bout, to do it 5 times, 5 minutes for 5 times. This is wrestling, jiu-jitsu, grappling, judo, karate, like all the above.
Have you trained as a boxer? Have you done boxing training?
Yeah, I've done boxing and Muay Thai.
I haven't done boxing training per se. I've hit a heavy bag and a speed, but from people that have done the actual like training, they say that is as just exhausted after 3 minutes as they've been at anything.
Boxing is immediate results. It is immediate. That's why I like to do it. I did it every off season when I trained for football because football can get so monotonous, like doing the same drills over and over. And I was like, let me do something different. Let me like hit something. Let me do something competitive.
Yeah.
So it was cool to do that. And I still enjoy it. And I'm also a huge boxing fan alone. So that's why I like to do that. I think it's really cool.
Ryan Hollins and I have had this conversation. I've actually had a conversation with a number of NBA guys that, because I was curious, because the game in the 90s was a wrestling match, and then they changed the rules and wouldn't allow you to impede progress, or it was free movement was the mantra for officials. And I was curious what was more physically taxing, the game today where it is up and down, there's more possessions, it's a faster game without question, but there's not as much physical contact, versus a game with fewer possessions, less up and down, but is more physical. And the guys that I've talked to have all said today's game is way more taxing.
I agree.
And did you experience kind of the same thing over, I mean, has there been the same, I feel as if in some ways there's been the same evolution in football.
Guys are faster and more athletic. I would say I bought myself more years when I went from corner to safety. Corner is just track meet all day long.
Huh.
And that was physically draining. However, safety can be physically taxing because you're always hitting. So you'll be more sore. But in terms of your legs, saving your legs, corner back by far is draining because you're reacting the whole time. Think of how brutal that is on your body to react. Now, playing receiver, I know where I'm going. I know how to, you know, accelerate, decelerate, change directions. I know how to pace myself. I know what to do. Sometimes running a route, you're just trying to find the open zone. You know, you're not running full speed. But cornerback, I'm on 100 every single time. So physically, that was more taxing. And then when I moved to safety, I was like, damn, I don't have to run as much. I can do this for a long time.
One of the interesting arguments that I've heard when it comes to the NBA, because we always think of, well, today's athletes are so much better. They've just been honed to be better athletes. And I feel like physically, the human anatomy is evolving because of all that we know about nutrition and training and everything else. But they made a point that I find interesting, which is everybody thinks today's game is faster because of the number of possessions and therefore more taxing. But they made the point that look at the games and how often guys are only running from three-point line to three-point line versus in the day of Showtime and Magic Johnson, where it was up and down. There wasn't the physicality of, you know, the Bad Boys with Detroit and moving onward, but they were getting up and down, but they were going 94 feet because you were shooting very few threes. If you could finish at the rim, you did. You didn't pull up at the three-point line.
Right. But there's a lot of more ISOs too, so there's more standing around.
You mean more ISOs today?
Today, a lot of one-on-ones today.
Very true. Well, especially if you're watching the Rockets and the Warriors.
Guys are standing around and everybody wants to shoot, you know? There is a lot of back and forth though because of the shooting, but I understand what you're saying. Actually, this when I brought up MMA in terms of the most physically exhausting, it was a really cool moment. So our son, Ryder, our 8-year-old, you know, he's been wrestling, I think, maybe 3 months now. And his coach is Mark Munoz, the UFC, former UFC fighter,
mm-hmm.
And because it's his wrestling club. And he wasn't there that day, but his son, Mark Munoz's son, Trey Munoz, who just won nationals for, I believe, 170 pounds. He's won national champion. He's going to Arizona State. He led the class. So when they drilled for a while, and then when they started doing live is literally like a live scrimmage between you and your partner. So Ryder's wrestling a kid his age, and you know they go four rounds, and Ryder whoops him, right? And then he goes, switch partners. So he finds another kid, same age, maybe has 10 pounds on Ryder. really good match. Ryder had to work because the kid's pretty strong, but Ryder got him too. And then the coach goes, switch partners. So there's only 3 8-year-olds in that class. So he already wrestled the other 2 8-year-olds. He can't wrestle them again. So he went up and found this 11-year-old that's actually good friends with him, but the kid is good. So Ryder goes against him. He already had 8 matches, and this kid is good. And then, you know, Ryder's battling, has a couple of escapes, and then he ends up getting a pin. And I was like, I know he looked at me like, oh, shoot, Dad. Like, if he swore, I wouldn't have been mad. So and then the next time, coach is like, switch partners. I was like, wow, they got to go again. And I see Ryder just, like, bent over, struggling. And I can see his face, like, because I can see his mouthpiece, because I don't know if he's smiling or crying, but I looked at his eyes, and his eyes were watery. I mean, he pretty much was crying without making the sound. And he gets another 11-year-old. This kid easily has 30 pounds on him. This kid was chubby. This kid was a hefty boy. And I just gave him a thumbs up. I didn't call him over. I just wanted to see how he handled it.
Yeah.
And he was wrestling the kid, and the kid was just heavy, just laying on him. I'm like, damn, dude, this is tough. Like, I kind of feel bad for him right now. And he's struggling. I see him crying while he's wrestling. And then all of a sudden, he just slaps a double leg takedown on this kid and took him down.
Wow.
Oh, dude, that right there. And then the match was over. Coach blew the whistle, and he came over to me. I was like, dude, hands down, that was the coolest shit I ever seen.
Yeah.
In my life. He was like, what do you mean? I was like, dude, you're exhausted. Yeah. You had every right to, like, I don't want to go anymore. And you were dead tired. And you just found something deep inside of you to, like, I'm going to take this kid down and get a half and pin him.
That's good stuff.
And this was one of the heaviest kids in that class, 11 years old. My son's 8. It was so cool, man. And he was just, like, drained. And but he understood. That's what's cool. He found something in himself to push himself at 8 years old. I don't know if I would be able to do that at 8 years old. That was cool.
Yeah, no, that is.
So he was exhausted.
Amazing.
Now, my story, I played with the dads on Tuesday night, and we played for like 4 hours. Let me stop.
But training-wise, was there a time where the most gassed in a game or outside of a game?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Training-wise, whatever it might be.
Where I want to quit?
Yes, the most physically gassed you've been.
So for one, I've driven myself like to work hard where I almost passed out. I have never thrown up from a workout.
Okay.
Never, and I would never let myself. But when I was at Boston College, we had the conditioning test called the 300-yard shuttle. By far, the most difficult conditioning test of all time. You have to run back and forth 25 yards to complete 300 yards. I believe it's 6 trips.
And in a certain time?
Yes, you had to finish it. I think our time was... I think it was like 56, something like that. 56 Oof. Seconds, something like that.
Yeah. They call it seven. Yeah, they got 17s in basketball, in the NBA, where you go sideline to sideline, and you have to do 17 sideline lines in, like, guards have to do it, I think, in 64, maybe 61, and then forward 64, and then I think... centers get like 66 or 67. And Riley's the one who invented, Pat Riley was the one who invented those. But killer 17s.
Dude, it was brutal. I'm talking about like guys' legs would lock up. Some guys did throw, some guys did pass out. It was brutal. That is the one thing that I did not look forward to. It was the worst. Hands down the worst. I hated that. And the worst thing about it too was you would run in groups. So when I would go up there, it'd be all my friends. And all my friends are 4'3s, 4'4s, 4'5s. So there's no pacing. We're doing this conditioning test.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you were gonna run for real. There's no like you're gonna come down and he's like 55, 50, you know, and I would jump through. No, we were finishing at like 52. We were out of here.
We had the most memorable for me was in college soccer. And we'd have to run a field length wind sprints essentially. You went from end line to the goalie box, the 6-yard box, back to end line to the 18, top of the 18, end line, midfield, end line, far 18, end line, far goal box, end line to end line and back. And you had to do that, I want to say, in 2 minutes. And at one point, we did 10 of those in a row after a full practice. And that was the most exhausted I've ever been. No, actually, no, I take that back. The other time I was exhausted, I worked out with BJ Armstrong, was getting ready for the season, and he invited me to go with him. And so he was working out with his trainer. And so I went and I did my workout, and then they invited me to join them and do their training, which I was already like, I was pretty much sated. I'd done what I needed to do fitness-wise, but I couldn't say no, so I jumped in. And then we played pickup after that. And I remember I didn't throw up, but I got like the flu, or I got sick. I was sick the next 2 days. My body was compromised. That's the hardest I remember. Anyway, so one of the other, oh, by the way, did you see the end of game 3, Rockets Warriors?
I did.
Steph Curry with the rub dunk. With mm-hmm. getting blocked by the rim. And I felt so bad for him.
Why?
Well, because that's embarrassing. That's embarrassing.
Physically exhausted.
I get that. I mean, he had missed a layup earlier, and then he wide open and he goes for the dunk and doesn't get it. Most embarrassing moment for you.
In a game?
Yeah. Where you just go, oh, wish I had that one back.
Oh, man. I mean, getting scored on is pretty embarrassing, I guess. Right? It happens.
Yeah,
it's supposed to happen.
Yeah, it happens,
like,
to everybody.
Yeah, it happens to everybody.
I mean, if a guy puts a move on you and you fall down, to me, that's like, ugh, damn.
Yeah.
And even if you just lost your footing as opposed to, like, the guy really shook you. That's what always bothers me.
No, the most embarrassing thing, yeah. And for me, though, like, regardless if the national TV saw it or not, when I was in the Redskins, we were playing the Packers, and this is where I always got myself in trouble. I would always overthink and outthink myself. I'll do myself. So I remember we were in the goal line, and we were in cover zero, meaning you have no help inside at all. The week before, we played the Cowboys, and we caught cover zero, and I ended up picking it off. And so I'm like, okay, I know Green Bay watches film, so there's no way they're going to run the same play. They can't run a slant. They're going to go outside. So I played inside and just jumped outside. And I still don't know who he is. Crossed me, dude. And it was some kid, too. I never heard of him. And he totally just lit me up, hit me with this crazy crossover. It was like he had a basketball in his hand. And then he caught the ball for the 2-point conversion. Mm. And I just turned around and I just ran to the sideline. And the worst part is the GM, Scott McLuhan, was right there on the sideline. I saw him first.
Oh.
He was like, he saw it, though.
Yeah.
He was like, Will, the F was that? I was like, he just got me, bro.
I've always wondered what that's like, because I kind of know how it works NBA-wise, but there's such a division of labor. And when you get called out, is there a difference when you get called out by the head coach versus when you get called out by your position coach?
No. Here's my thing. Especially when I get called out or yelled at, I don't mind it, because that's if I know where it's coming from. You know? Like, if I have a coach that has been, like, investing so much time and, you know, believes in me, and I know everything he's doing he wants his players to succeed. Then I'm cool with it. You know, I don't like it, but I get it, you know. Like, if I mess up, I know I messed up. Like, I'm a professional. I know I messed up. Right. I know what I did wrong.
Right.
But if it's a place where he just wants to like yell and he's all about himself, he has an ego, it's like, man, don't even bother. Don't even waste your time. You know? And it was interesting because I remember when I was in, I think it was my rookie year in Green Bay, I was rehabbing or something, and I think I was in the way, and the defensive coordinator at the time, his name is Bob Sanders, and he was like, light me up, like, well, blah, blah, get the F out the way, da, da, da. And I was like, are you kidding me? And I was ready to blitz right back, you know? And I remember Al Harris, he pulled me aside. He's like, yo, he's like, well, you cannot do that. He's like, you have to play the game. And I was, what do you mean? He was like, you need to play the game, because at the end of the day, if it comes down to you or him, it's going to be you.
Yeah.
So you got to play the game. So
that's where the NFL is different from the NBA.
It is. Because, listen, if I had a guaranteed contract and I made all this money,
yeah,
I don't want to hear it.
It is. It's an interesting dynamic when it comes to the NFL. Do you appreciate that? Do you like it? Or do you wish that the NFL was more like the NBA?
Every team is not like that. I think especially now, coaches and players have evolved in terms of their relationship and communication. Yeah, in that regards. But yeah, you don't have that anymore, that old school, like, get in his face, do this and that and third. Especially nowadays, if you do that now, one, you're gonna yell that. Two, if you do it, you're gonna be on social media.
Right. Right.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you saw what Izzo. Izzo's old school. He got in the kid's face. And people didn't like it. Jimbo Fisher, same thing, got in the kid's face. People don't like it. And it's like everyone needs to relax. Because I know with those two coaches, it's coming from a place where they think highly and they expect a lot out of you.
Right.
And that's where it's coming from. Even the kid from A&M, he came out and said, like what I did was wrong. I messed up. So I had every right to get yelled at.
Yeah, I can't help but feel that this is the worst part of social media, is that everybody is able to express their criticism and a hypersensitivity to everything that's going on. And I saw a clip by Ricky Gervais, the comedian.
Yeah.
And he was talking about social media, and he said, he says, I put something out on Twitter. He goes, and I have like 12 million followers. And somebody responds to it and says, you can't say that, or I hate that. He goes, you know what that's like? That's like somebody in the town square putting up a notice that they're giving guitar lessons. And somebody sees it and goes, but I don't want guitar lessons. and there's a number, you know, it has little tabs on it. It has a number, and they take one of the numbers, and they call the number, and they go, hey, are you giving guitar lessons? I don't want guitar lessons. I hate guitar.
Yeah.
He goes, look, if it's not for you, just keep it moving. Just like.
Did you see Kevin Hart? He said he had a similar take. He said, I could post something, and then he said, this is how Twitter works. One person will look at it and be like, ah, that's BS. I don't agree with it.
Right.
And then someone else reads it and be like, yeah, you know what? He's right. That is BS. I don't agree with that. And now people have all these hot takes. It's interesting. I'll have to forward it to you. It's really, really cool.
I'll check it out. Yeah. But it was that for me, because you put anything out on social media. I mean, I'm sure you've experienced it. You put anything out on social media.
I'm dealing with something right now.
Is that right?
What is it? So Ryan, he put out that talent, that hard work beats talent.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And you said, but not in high school. He said 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10 times hard work beats talent. Right. I said, not in high school.
Right. Well, who came back on you on that?
So the consensus is saying, like, yes, I agree, not in high school. And the one kid was like, hey, you know, that's not true. My team, we play teams that were more talented, and we beat them. I was like, well, that's different. That's a team thing, I believe. Like, you guys found a way to beat them as a team.
Right.
You had great coaching. They had poor coaching.
Right.
That simple.
Right.
And the one guy just said, nice example for the kids. That's right.
It's true. Well, but Ryan also said like 10 times out of 10.
10 times out of 10. That's not true.
No, there is no 10 times out of 10. in anything.
No.
absolutes.
Right.
And that's where Twitter becomes a little nutty.
Right, because people, they look past the whole thing.
Yeah.
10 times out of 10. No. And I said that just, I like to be like bold and say crazy things out there. So I remember in high school, I didn't touch a single weight. I didn't lift one weight. I trained for a little bit because I got invited to the Nike camp. I didn't lift one weight.
You know why? You know why?
It's nice.
Because you could. Because right. You could. Right. If you had to lift weights to perform to the level you wanted to perform, you would have lifted weights.
I would have lifted weights, yeah. And they were. I had other teammates that went to tons of camps. They did all this training. They did all this, that, and the third, and they were working their butts off. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you line up.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
It's go time. You know, was it Casey Hayward, the cornerback for the Chargers? He commented on there too, and he said in college too.
Yeah.
I was like, I see what you mean. There are some guys that are extremely productive in college football.
A lot of 4.3s on the street.
No, a lot of 4.3s in the league.
Well, that's there are a lot of 4.3s in the league, which means there's also a lot of 4.3s on the street.
Yeah, so my point, you just wanted a reason to say that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in part. But listen,
really quick. So take a guy who's like extremely productive, 1,000-yard receiver. Let's say he had 10 touchdowns, but didn't test well. Hmm. You get this special teams guy who's just a freak, 4.3. He's getting drafted because he ran a 4.3, because he's talented.
Right.
You know?
I see it with my kids. Like my daughter's got some special physical skills that, as I see it, she might be able to play in college.
Right.
My son is a great shooter, smart player, but if he's not 6'4", 6'5", I don't know how far he's going. He'll be fine in high school.
But what is he now, you said?
To go to the next level. What?
How tall is he now?
5'8". He's a freshman.
Oh, he'd be all right.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. He's got to get there. I mean, he was 10 pounds, 14 ounces, 22 and a half inches as a baby. And he's a year young. He should be a year back. He should be an eighth grader right now.
Okay.
So he's got a chance.
That was like me.
You were early?
I was a 17-year-old freshman.
Yeah, yeah. He won't be driving until his senior year in high school.
I don't think I drove until like my senior year in college. I didn't need a license. Everyone wanted to give me a ride, so I never got my license.
Oh, even better. Even better. All right, before we go, actually, you know what? Let's save this. A friend of yours, Dan Orlovsky, I heard him talking about quarterbacks and young quarterbacks making the jump to the NFL. And obviously we have Kyler Murray trying to do the same thing that Baker Mayfield did last year. And he opened my eyes to a number of things. I've always recognized that it's a huge jump, but I thought it was lessened from college to pros in the NFL because you have to go a requisite number of years to college. But he made a point about playing quarterback, about what it's like to walk into that room that's different, as well as the language of the NFL and the fact that it's like learning a different language and having to be fluent in it, particularly when you're a quarterback. I want to run all of that by you in the next podcast. And who knows, maybe we'll even have Dan join us for that conversation. See if we can get him on your speed dial. But that does it for this episode of Bucher and Blackman, subsidiary of Bucher and Friends, part of the United WeCast Network. Keep in mind, we only need a couple more ratings, and then we're going to have our next drawing for prizes. So if it's on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, rate the show. We don't care how many stars you give us. We hope it's 5. But if it's not, that's okay too. But screenshot it and send it to us, and then you'll be eligible to win some prizes. And we like giving things away. So, for Will, for myself, thanks for listening.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.